Welcome back. Another episode of The Break Room. I call it The Break Room because I feel like we need to stop, take a break, and reflect on where we're going in life and where we've been. This episode is a long overdue, long time coming overdue. Lisa, welcome to The Break Room.
Oh my God. Thank you, Mike. Like, you are not lying. When we say long overdue, I think we've been trying to do this since last year. Yeah. Probably longer than that, but I am definitely happy that we're able to make it happen.
Finally. Yes, let the Lord will it. Finally, Jesus.
Listen, much to discuss. Much is going on. I'm like really excited about it.
I agree. A lot is going on. Some we'll delve into and some we won't pour too much into because our mentals and our emotions can't handle it. So, okay. It was a dark day in November, I'll tell you that. But first and foremost, before we start in the chit-chat about everyday life, I want to properly introduce you, or really have you introduce yourself to the audience. So for those who don't know, who are you, Lisa, and where do you come from?
Oh my gosh, that's such a hard question for me. Like, I don't do well with talking about myself, but...
Why not?
I don't know. Like, I'm one of those people that, like a doer. You do. And then when you have to pause to kind of be like, well, this is what I've done and accomplished. It's kind of hard to put those into words because you don't really think about it. Anyway, I will...
The answer. I asked because when we first met about a year or so ago, more than that, we definitely had a lot of commonalities as far as ideologies, as far as perspectives. But as I am the son of Haitian immigrants, people who come from the island, you actually are from JA. If I remember correctly, straight up, I'm a gringo. You are the real deal.
Yes,
which is important.
I got to be careful. I don't want ICE to revoke my papers. But anyway.
Yeah, that's right. My God. Listen, no, she's fine.
I'm definitely a naturalized citizen, right?
Hey,
like,
thank you.
My family, well, I would say I'm like second generation immigrant. I guess I could say that, right? So I was born and raised in Jamaica.
Town, what parish?
I was about to tell you.
My bad.
So I'm from a little town in Jamaica called Frankfield. It is in the country. So Jamaica has like subculture, like country life and like city life, right? I'm definitely country life. I was born in Kingston, but grew up in Clarendon because that's where my grandparents, our family home was. And my primary school education was in Jamaica. And then I migrated here. I think it was age 12 or 13, one of them. Between 12 and 13, I was like transitioning from 12 to 13. Mm-hmm. And so to live with my mother full time here. Throughout my childhood, I would travel back and forth every holiday, every school break, et cetera, et cetera. So definitely, if you cut me, I do bleed black, green, and gold.
Yes.
I am like super Jamaican and I'm going to be honest about it. Like, I didn't really fully appreciate my culture and my heritage until I got to college. So that's the whole different conversation. But that's my roots. I also grew up in New York.
Right.
A fusion between being Jamaican and a New Yorker. So it's like Jamaica all day, New York all day. And now I live in the D.C. metro area. So
Right.
Yeah.
I remember you telling me a wild story about your transition to New York or to Queens, but more so what got you out of Queens. So I want to touch upon that. But before I do, I wanna go back to what can you tell about life in Jamaica as a young girl, a young lady growing up in your era? Give me some context, some cultural context to what that is like for people who don't know.
Oh my gosh, it's such a nostalgic thing to talk about. And like I said, I didn't really find true appreciation for my culture and how I grew up until like my adulthood, right? But those early days in the country, so my grand parents were farmers. So let me back up a bit because this tells a really like profound story for my family. So it kind of makes sense for me to give you the context on it. So after slavery ended in the Caribbean, and Jamaica was like, "We're not working for free, bro. Like, if y'all want this agriculture, y'all better come up on some land and some other stuff, because we're not about to do that for free."
I hear that.
So they did actually give land grants to formerly enslaved folks to work the land to grow crops and stuff like that, so that they can re-energize the economy, which briefly kind of I don't want to say tank, but it definitely had an impact once emancipation came. So to get incentivize the new workforce, and when I say new workforce, it's like free people now. Land was given to people to help incentivize them to grow, to build the agriculture. So my grandfather, that was passed down to him from his father to his father and uncle, and then it's to this day that land still exists in our family. So that's how I grew up. I grew up in a little town where we like I could name a million trees on the property. Like on any given day, as long as things were in season, we had it. Cherries, apples, mangoes, star apples, sugarcane, coffee, cocoa, all breadfruit, all of it. So growing up, it's very simple life. And so you learn how to like appreciate think like the little things and natural things, you know? And that was a huge transition moving here full time, because that was not the life.
No.
Very communal in terms of everybody knows everybody. Family members lived within walking distance. Almost like every other house in the community was a family member. So you were truly like in community, church community. Listen, there was one time that I was walking home from school with my cousins and a group of friends, right? Like it was down to like three of us, right? My cousin, one of my closest cousins, her name was Melissa. And another classmate who happened to be a boy. So my cousin Melissa, her house, we call her Tani. So her house was before the boy classmate. So obviously she came off the path sooner than he did. Well, let me tell you, this is how communal Jamaicans are, right? In the country. Between when my cousin went to her house and I was walking with my classmate, and it's like sixth grade, somebody drove past, either in a taxi or a vehicle, saw me walking with a boy, and by the time
Boy,
I got home, my
boy.
grandmother had already gotten messages that I was on the street with some boy. So of course I got my ass whooped.
God.
I didn't even do nothing. Like, but just the fact that I was seen out there walking home, like they're very proud people. They don't want people we call it bringing news on family.
Bringing
So my
news.
grandmother was very strict in terms of making sure that, like we were seen as upstanding kids. And, she had her and my grandfather had a pretty big reputation in the community also. So like that's how communal, like you couldn't do nothing without nobody
I could
knowing
imagine.
and snitching on you.
I could imagine. I could
Yeah.
imagine. As you're saying, it's the breadfruit. I'm thinking about it in the back of my mind. Like I could see it, and I could see the road and everything. When it comes to Jamaica, I've been to Ocho Rios, I've been to Montego, but those are resorts or close to resorts. I never had the opportunity yet, thus far, of like just walking the streets like I want to. Like I remember years ago, Eve, the rapper Eve, she had this kind of show on Esquire Channel or something, where she would go to Kingston and she would go by this fish market and there's water, and she would go and grab certain red snappers she wanted and whatnot. And I was like, damn, I gotta just go out there and walk with the people. That's my dream, just to walk with the people, live it out. I want to see Spanish Town. I want to see certain neighborhoods, and I want to see what it's like, the real texture of a culture, because when you visit an island, you don't get a chance to see the texture of a
You
place.
don't. Definitely not in Montego Bay. Definitely not in Ocho, not Ocho Rios. I think you can get more authenticity in Ocho Rios, because of where it's geographically located. But Montego Bay, Negril, that's for the tourist palate. right? And so you do get a more watered down version of the culture and even the food, because the food options that you get there is nothing unless you go out into like the streets, right? And have and nowhere to go outside of like the perimeter, then you're not really getting the full, plus it's way more expensive. So as a Jamaican, and if I go back home for vacation, I never go to Negril or Montego Bay. I mean, I've once in the Blue, but it's not my preference because it's way more expensive. And it's more congested and it's doing too much,
I
in
can
my
imagine.
opinion. So that's never my first choice of place to go for my vacations when I go home.
I indulge me for a second. Indulge me, because how you sound and speak today, it sounds straight up Northern American. Did you lose your accent? Did it leave you? Did it so?
That's the beauty of it. I surprise people all the time because first of all, when I say I'm Jamaican, they're like, "Oh, you don't look Jamaican." And I'm like, "What am I supposed to look like? A
My
beef
God.
patty? Like, what does looking like Jamaican? What does looking Jamaican
Like
mean?"
an
So,
oxtail.
like, right, jerk chicken, ackee and sausage. I don't know, but I like most people. When I say I'm Jamaican, they're like, "Oh, you don't look Jamaican." And then I'll start speaking it. So sometimes I'll intentionally introduce my accent in spaces where I really want to be known as Jamaican. And then there are times that I'm full blown, and then there's times where I don't want you to know shit about me, so I'm gonna keep it very assimilated. So, but no, I still have my accent big and thick. Like anytime you
Yep.
want ear to go ear, dear. Anytime you want it to come out.
My older sister, she's light skinned. She's fair skinned like you. And my dad is even lighter. He has freckles. And between the two, especially my sister, she never liked being mistaken for being like Dominican or Puerto Rican or whatever. It's like, no, I'm Asian. She'd make it a point like, no. And I guess people have these, people jump out the window with their, I guess, their
Assumption,
assumptions and their
their bias.
bias,
Let's be real. They call it call. Let's call it the bias.
implicit bias or bias straight up. And it's, I don't know, it's on one level, I'm like, you know what? You can't say people, they are who they are, and human's gonna human. But I do feel like, man, like you should have some poise when you're asking people about their culture or about themselves, and you should have a little more tact. So I,
Ignorance.
it's ignorance. It's plain old
It's
ignorance.
ignorance because if anybody truly stopped to like learn about the Caribbean or Caribbean culture in general, they'll know they're, because of colonization and slavery, it's a mixed pot, right? Although it would be primarily Black-led nations because that was just the numbers. But in Jamaica, we our motto on our thing, on our coat of arms is out of many, one people. So we have people that are indigenous to the island, which we would refer to as Native American here, but indigenous folks. We got Africans, right?
Of
Like,
course.
so most of us have African descent, whether it's, from West Africa, East Africa, wherever.
No doubt.
And then, of course, some of us have European descent mixed in with all of that because of colonization and
Absolutely.
slavery. And then on and then midway through that, which people don't realize, because I hear a lot of talk about like Chinese people taking over Jamaica. But guess what? When slavery ended in Jamaica, they actually brought Chinese over from in the 1800s as
Absolutely.
indentured servants because the
Absolutely.
former slaves were like, "We ain't working for free. We're not doing that backbreaking labor no more."
Absolutely.
So the Chinese presence has been in Jamaica for years. This is
Absolutely.
not a new thing. So when people are like, Chinese are taking, so, and then of course, everyone is just, there's no hyphenated Jamaican, regardless of your ethnicity. Everyone is, you're identified by your nationality, which is just straight Jamaican, right?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Which was a new concept for me coming here full time. It's like, oh, you got to put yourself in a box when back home, that doesn't exist.
Yeah, absolutely. It's similar to Haiti, where in Haiti you'll find there's pockets of Syrian or Lebanese ethnic, or genetically Haitians, and just as, and there's a few Polish people too. Because back in World War II, I want to say, a lot of Polish people left from the war and wanted to like relocate and get away from the drama, and they chose Haiti. So you'll see some of that too. And like you said, it doesn't matter where you're from originally, you're in the nation, you adopted it, or you're born there. It is what it is. You are what you are now. So
Yeah.
I can relate to that. I want to ask you, speaking of colonization, I get to meet a lot of friends nowadays who are from the UK and overseas who are still of Jamaican descent. Do you have any family that came, that went over with the Windrush, or just in general, or went over to the
Yeah,
UK?
I do actually. I have family members on both sides of my family, on my father's side and on my mother's side, that migrated during the Windrush era. Well, for folks who don't know what the Windrush era
Yeah, explain that
is,
for me.
yeah. So that was during, I want to
60s
say,
or 50s? 60s?
no, probably like 50, like started it
50s.
like after World War II, I
All
would
right, right.
say. Like the late 80s, early 80s, between that period and the and like the mid 60s, I would say. Not Europe, the UK actually was inviting. So it's not like people just up and left their islands because they want, well, yes, conditions. As we know, most times when these countries are coming out of colonization or after a war, people have to rebuild. So in Britain and the UK, they wanted to rebuild Britain, right, with the labor force. So they actually were inviting people from their Commonwealth territory. So that's the Caribbean, that's India, that's Africa, Nigeria, Ghana, wherever, to help support their workforce through teaching, medical, right, whether it's nursing or some other kind of medical professionals. And of course, like the lowest paying jobs, like janitorial work and all of those like services. So yeah, I have fa we have family that went over during that time because compared to what was happening in the countries in Jamaica and probably other parts of the Caribbean, that seemed like a better opportunity at the time.
Right. Do you see some sort of difference between family you may have or friends you may have that grew up in the UK or in Europe versus over here or down in JA? Do you feel a difference, or do you feel like it's all culturally more or less the same?
No, man, it's different. It's a different culture. UK culture. So Black culture in the UK is straight. It's very African and Caribbean infused, right? So you have to think about it. Most of the Black people that were born in the UK have either Caribbean descent or African descent.
No
So
doubt.
a lot of the culture is not like here in America where, you have like the Black cultures, like people that were formerly enslaved and grew up here and kind of like
Like
have a different
Americans.
kind of, yeah. No, the Black culture in the UK is mainly Black folks from the Caribbean and Africa. So it like the music inspires a lot there. Food, even the slang. If you ever listen to people from the UK, what their slang sounds like, it's like they hijack all these patois words. It's like a mix between
Yeah, you hear them, the
like
mandem.
Mandem, like stuff like that, right? Like they talk like that. So it's very much there. The Black culture is very heavily Caribbean and African.
Influence, yeah.
Yeah, like if Britain were like, let's get rid of all the Black people now, they wouldn't have no goddamn culture.
It just be beans in
Just
the
saying.
morning. It just be beans and toast in the morning.
No, seriously, like half their, I think as I think 70% of their medical workforce is Black from
My God.
the islands. And I could be misquoting the statistics, but it's
That's
up
high.
there. That's a high, yeah, nurses, teachers, doctors, engineers. So, the culture is very much dependent on the saying.
I take it 2, 3 years ago, whatever it was, you weren't at home saying, God save the Queen. You weren't really on that time.
No, but some folks who have that mindset, were. So that's another legacy of colonialism in the islands is that like the monarch is still the head of state, right? Even now to this day, we have a prime minister and we also have the governor general who is basically the mouthpiece for the crown, right? We still have a justice system where our highest court is the UK Privy Council for Appeal, which is how Vybz Kartel got his
I'm glad you
conviction
mentioned that. I was
overturned.
going to say that. Yeah.
Yeah, so there's still a lot of on the generation, I'll just say, that's very like holds the that we don't hold the UK in high regard for some things, like our generation, but I think more so like earlier generations, my parents' generations, you know, they see that a little differently. I have siblings that live in the UK. I still have, I have
No
two
kidding.
sisters. I have, my aunt lives there. I have cousins there. I have a lot of family that live there.
They probably look at us as crazy with the whole healthcare conversation and.
Like one of my sisters is actually a journalist and she's a social justice activist also. So I'll
No
actually
kidding.
give you her page info. You could
I
follow her.
can't wait to follow
Yeah.
her. Yeah. Okay. Matt, I think you mentioned that one time to me too. Yeah, by your sister. But yes, I want to follow her page and we'll plug in here too. Can I want to tap into your movement to New York and what was that like for you? But you mentioned generational gaps and you mentioned Vibes Cartel. And I can't resist. Indulge me for a second. Indulge me. I can't resist asking you a question based on those two things. Not in depth about Vibes because I could care less. You know,
Okay, we're on the same page.
I'm an 80s, 90s baby. So my frame of mind for a dance hall is, you know, like, you know, Buju, Abba, Patra, Shumadabadoe. You know, I'm from
Oh,
that era.
Barrington,
Barrington. I'm from that era. I'm from Ghetto Red Hot. I'm from that era, okay? So my mind frame, I don't really dig the new school era of dance hall in the last 15-ish, 20 years. It's not
No,
for me.
man.
It's
It's
not
not
for
for me
me.
either.
It's not for me. I'm not here to judge tonight. It's just not for me. But, you know, a few months ago, or maybe it's been a year now, when Vibes was getting released, I'm in the North Bronx, you know, which is heavy, heavy West Indian, heavy Jamaican influence in the North Bronx. So I have a lot of great coworkers, a lot of great peers who are Jamaican or Jamaican descent. And when Vibes was coming out, for me, when I heard it, I was like, one, I don't really care. But two, I saw it as more of a pop culture conversation. But a lot of my peers who were Jamaican, they were having internal, I don't want to say conflict, but they were having internal discussion about how to receive him coming out. I had OGs, OG Jamaican folk, who were like, listen, I don't really celebrate him. I don't like the adulation he's receiving, you know, because he's involved with such and such things, crimes or violence, et cetera. I don't know his background too well as far as the violence, so I can't speak to it. But you had that. Then you had some younger people who were like, no, he's God. He's exalted. Like he's the man. He's everything, you
I
know,
didn't
whatever.
know.
I don't know if you noticed, but in the last few weeks, he had a Barclays show in Brooklyn.
Yo,
And
sold
it was like
out.
$900 tickets, $900
I
tickets.
believe you. They had his first concert was New Year's in Jamaica called Freedom Street, and that shut like that was such a huge economic boost to the country. I mean, the country's been doing well economically. Let me just put that out there. But
Good, good.
yeah, those tickets where people were flying down
Flying down, right?
from wherever to go see Vibes and get it. You know, I get it in terms of, so let me just put a disclaimer on it. I am not an expert in cartelism. I'm just gonna tell you that right now.
Nor I'm.
I like some of his songs because they're, you know, there've been some hits, right? But I'm not one of those like diehard cartel fans. So but I understand it. I understand it because of if you listen to some of Cartel music, some of his music have been like, but I don't know if people like him because of the song when he does the songs that are like true to the culture, which is like system, like talking about systems of oppression and stuff like that,
Right,
right? Like
right.
uprooting Babylon, right? Like that's where reggae culture started, right? As a form of protest to oppression and all those other things. But cartel songs over time, like I guess you have to think about it from the perspective of dancehall culture. Like more like life could be hard for people, right? But one thing them knows that I'm gonna do at the end of the week is there's a dance. They're
Yeah.
there having a good time, drinking them
Yeah.
rum and dance, you know, whole a vibe. So I think Cartel represents that for a lot of people, right? Like maybe not necessarily his, although his music has been influential in one way or another, but I think he, for that generation, represents like, you know, some,
Escapism.
yes, escapism. Like that's the word I'm looking for from the struggle and the bustle, right? Like it's a means to have a good time.
Right.
Or he's speaking directly to some of the people that like live those situations. When he started talking about Gaza life and all that, people can relate to
Right.
that, you know? That's a lot of people's reality. So cartel to that generation and some of our generation, to be honest, represents what Buju represents to a lot of people. So think about when Buju was coming out of jail, right? That was a whole thing too,
Yes,
right?
it was.
That
Oh,
was
yes.
a whole thing too. People were waiting at the airport for him,
Absolutely.
both when he was getting deported and when he came home to a king's welcome.
Yes,
So,
he
but
did.
then again, what did Buju represent to a lot of people? His music, right? You know? So I guess you kind of have to look at it in context for people. Personally don't like a lot of the things that Cartel has been associated with, but I do also recognize that Cartel also represents escapism for a lot of people. Just to be true to for 4 or 5 hours, I'm going to this party or this dance or this little hole in the wall. I'm gonna go dance, you know, I'm gonna dance, I'm gonna have a good time, I'm gonna smoke my spliff, I'm gonna drink my rum and
Right.
Red Bull and have a good time. So I get that part of it.
Yes, I am. I turned 40 this year. So, I grew up going to bashments. I grew up partying. And I was never someone who was a party pooper. I could be in the moment having fun. But it's funny. The other day, I'm going through a shuffle on my phone, and Rompin' Shop comes on.
That's the song. That's the song right there. That's the song
I'm
right
listening to
there.
him and
Just saying.
Spice. Shout out to Spice. I'm listening to him and Spice. And I'm just like, wow, I'm getting old. Because now when I hear these lyrics, I don't feel the same way like I did 15, 18 years ago. I feel so grown now hearing this. I feel like so adulty. Like I feel my ears are like, ooh, put that down. Go read a Bible. Where you're like, where you know,
I'm
growing.
listening, just
Yeah.
not when my kids are in the car, but
But
I be singing to that joint too.
There's also that side of me that grew up listening to Peter Tosh. I grew up listening to, I'm a big Lovers Rock person, like
Yep, me too. Rock
Gregory I
steady.
Rocksteady, Gregory Isaacs. I like slow jams. I like Night Nurse, stuff like that. So, that's my style. But as a young man coming up, I also knew to have fun too. So, whether it was Red Rat, whether it was whoever, I grew up in the 90s and 2000s dance hall scene. But I do realize at a certain time, like, man, I'm getting older. Like, I just can't hang no more as far as like either some of the songs or playing the songs with certain people around. You know what I mean?
No. Some of these newer songs, it's like, what is this? Like,
Now it's not as now
you
it's
wanna clutch your pearls, you're like,
yeah.
what?
Now it's really raunchy. I didn't think it would get as raunchy as it is today, but it's really raunchy. Like to me, like I was happy when I heard Stylo G with Dumpling, because at least with that's like on that's teeters. That's nothing like what the street. So I do I want to ask you, like, is it that we're getting old, or is culture getting more and more raunchy or street, or is it both?
Well, definitely there's been a lot of pushing of boundaries, right? Like in terms of what's socially acceptable. And is it getting more raunchy? I just think that a lot of things have become more acceptable, right? So years ago, when people wouldn't say a thing or do a thing or, you know, promote a thing, now it's socially acceptable. So they've taken away the stigma that would be attached to that thing, and now it's like it's culture now.
Right.
But I think too, I want to say this because for people that don't understand reggae music, I feel like it gets lost in the shuffle of dance hall. And dance hall is a subculture of reggae. It's not reggae music. That's not what it is, right? I mean, it is, but it's a subculture.
Right.
From like what reggae music truly represents is what we call freedom music, you know?
Right.
And I think a lot of people are concerned about there being a balance between preserving reggae music, right? As the at the core for the mission, right? And as opposed to balancing it out with dance hall, which is the subculture, which is the party life, which is the fun, which is having a good time, right? But let's not get lost because we've gotten comfortable with a lot of things, right? There's still struggle. There's still a need for resistance. There's still a need to preserve history and pass it down through the music. And I think that's where we see a lot of challenges now is that, okay, you don't have a lot of newer artists, very few, I can name a handful, that are trying to keep and preserve the essence of reggae, right? But what the world is getting now is more of the dancehall culture as reggae. So it's conflated. And I think that's where the biggest concern for a lot of people, me included, that doesn't get lost, you know, so.
That phenomenon you juxtapose between the conflation of reggae and dance hall, the unfortunate one, the conflation. I see that also here up here in the States with just a regular degular American music, whether it's hip hop or whatever. I see a lot of young folks, or not just young folks, but newer music. It's less meaningful. Less meaningful, less message. And I always thought the true maker of an artist, a great artist of any genre, whether it's art, painting, sculpture, music, whatever, music, film, is to entertain me. Yes, entertain me. Let me have a good time, but teach me something as well. Teach me something as well. And nowadays, we're getting less lessons. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, my personal opinion on that is that it comes from not having like a value system. Like a lot of these, like not that it's not a value system. I think people's values are very like are different, right? Values are values, whether they're meaningful, progressive, or they effectuate change in some way. But the same is true when you flip that on the head. Like if all I value is money, individualism, and all of those other things, then yeah, everything I do is going to move according to that, including the music I'm putting out there. So especially with a lot of these younger folks, you know, the collective culture, the need to teach and have some kind of meaningful anything attached to the music, it's not there. Like the sense of urgency is not there like we saw in like the 90s, right? A whole where you can listen to hip hop and like be like, yo, that, you know, that's tough. Like that rocks. But at the same time, when you really peel back the layers, you're hearing like you can visualize like this story that's happening, but also there's some messaging
Substance.
behind it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Music is one of the biggest, like, what's the word I want to say?
I mean, music is everything to me. For music is probably one of the most singular instant things to jolt you, to influence you,
So influential, though.
it's so influential. It's probably the biggest art form out there to influence you. Like the other day I was talking to some friends, some coworkers, and we were asking each other 5 senses to a body, 5 human senses. What is one you could live without? And for me, I said taste. Taste easy. Because without taste, I'll eat better. I'll eat better.
That is true.
You know, I'll
That's
eat
true.
better. But I was like, you cannot take away my ears. You cannot take away my ears.
Yeah, I would die if I couldn't. I mean, I don't want to,
And
but
knock on wood,
yeah.
but you know, I need music. Music is what has healed me, has comforted me, has given me strength, has coddled me, has hugged me. So, you know, to your point, yeah, music is that influential, that powerful, and that strong to the soul. It's
And
spiritual,
if
you
it
know?
is, it's not appreciated. It's like it's discarded. Like I hear some new artists coming out, who have been out, right? And they're talented, and their music is phenomenal, but they're not as popular, or you know what I mean, or they're not as commercialized, or haven't experienced a commercial success as the Sexy Reds or the Drakes. I'm sorry, people will fight me for this. I don't think Drake has had any meaningful
You and me are this. You and me
music
are.
at all. Like
You
he has
and.
some good party songs, but I have never heard a struggle in Drake's songs.
Preaching to the
And I could
choir.
just be it could just be me that I haven't listened to enough of his body of work, but I
That's
shouldn't
just
have
you.
to dig that deep. I'm just saying.
For a man of many resources who likes to swagger jack different cultures, you would think by now he has something more meaningful to say. But you know, it's funny. Someone had mentioned this about Drake recently. They said if you analyze his music, a lot of it is self-identified. So a lot of it is about himself, self-indulged, me, I, where as opposed to a lot of times other artists, they can paint a picture. They can paint a picture about someone else's story, about, or they can have a third eye view of the world. They could look at the world and analyze it. But with him, it's mostly me, self-indulged. I was happy last spring when Kendrick put the belt to the, you know what I'm saying? Because I felt like it was time for an upheaval, you know what I'm saying, of sorts. Even if it's just culturally for a moment, a cultural moment. I felt like it was necessary because I, to add it to your credit, you know, it felt like for a long time the villains were winning, you know? And I hate to do that to him because for all we know, he's a nice guy behind closed doors. Who knows? You know, we don't know these people personally. But from the music side of things, I never felt like I was spiritually moved by him or his ilk. You know what I'm saying? People like him. So I was not minded last spring. I was like, not like us. Thank you. You know, I was right there singing along with Kendrick. So, and I'm a big Kendrick fan anyway. But yeah, I mean, we are lacking generationally more than enough people who are motivating us as a people to push boundaries and entertain us, to your credit. So I don't know. I hope that in the future we get an awakening. But what's scary is, and I don't know if you thought about this or noticed this, what's scary is in American pop culture, every 20, 30 years since the 1920s, 1930s, there was always a new class, a new genre of people to try something different. So it was blues, then it was jazz, then it was rock, then it was eventually hip hop. Well, first R&B, then hip hop, disco. You would always have another generation that would like try something different and throw it out there, be creative, be in their mother's basement and try something different. For the last 20 years, 25,
I'm still
it's
trying
been
to figure out what's happening now.
the creativity has been shot down. Everybody is monkey see, monkey do. There's no creativity, not even just with us, even with our white brethren. You know, they used to be in their mom's basement trying things out, you know, and now they're just like rapping. I'm like, you're rapping too? You can't rap also. You know, I need to get back in the studio and try your own thing.
Listen, I think, you know what? I'm gonna go out on a limb, and people may have a different take on this. I'm willing to say that I'm also guilty of this to an extent. So I think that for a lot of us, our generation, and maybe I wouldn't even say our parents' generation, I'd say like a lot of us who are parents now, right? Because a good chunk of us are like have kids that are like emerging into their 18, 19, even early teens, believe it or not. And I think that a lot of us in these, in the, oh, we wanted our kids to have more or better than that we had before. We've done them a disservice because they've benefited from achieving things, right? Or having things given to them or us shielding them from certain things that now they're benefiting from things or think that life is, you know, like I'm entitled to this or, you know, they've reaped the benefits of success without actually earning it. And so you see a lot of that showing up in how, you know, this generation moves. I'll give you an example. My son, my bonus baby, because my stepson, who I've known since he was three, he was trying to do a rap thing like a couple of years ago, right? And one day he was like, "Hey, I got some, you know, I got a new child." Well, first of all, we were a little concerned because we were like, "Oh, bro, need some work," but was willing to support and encourage him on that journey of artistic expression and all that shit. To the point where one day I was like, fuck that. I don't know if I could cuss. I'm sorry. That
Good.
I said, I gotta, I got, I cannot take this anymore. I gotta give this kid a reality
Was
check.
it nails to the chalk? Was it nails to the chalkboard?
He was talking about stuff that he had no
No.
experience with. He was talking about picking up chicken as Bentley. And I said, you don't even have a driver's license, my dude. Like, what are you talking about? You know what I'm saying? Like he was going hard with this like fantasy life. And I get it. Some music could be fantasy, right?
Right,
But
I guess.
for him, like he believed that he was living this life. Now, we live in a moderately middle class neighborhood and you know, one of the richest black counties in the country,
No
blah, blah,
doubt.
blah, blah, blah. So he's surrounded by a lot of, you know, folks that are doing well and all that stuff. But I'm like, this is not your life, right? And even his delivery sounded like something we've heard before. So we gave him that feedback. I was like, look, if you want to do this as an individual, do this as you. What about this creative expression represents you? Like, where are you in all of this? You know what I mean? It sucks because it's not you. It sucks because it's not you. And I wish more parents would take that approach where we're giving these kids reality checks,
Right.
not causing harm, right? That's important. But giving our kids reality checks and having them earn things again, because they don't earn anything. They're
No, they don't.
so shielded and things are just given to them. And it's very much represented in their value system and how they're operating out there in the world.
To your credit, to your point, to add to that, I have an 18-year-old, an 8-year-old, and a 2-year-old.
Wow. You all
Yeah.
in the different
Oh yeah, we're all over the
generations.
place. And like you, the bonus baby, my oldest, I met her when she was 4 to 5 years old. Adopted her when we got married, me and my wife. And then we had Lauren, and then now we have Charlie. So Destiny, Lauren, Charlie. Me too. I have also seen this entitlement thing. Mind you, I was self-aware when I was their age. So I knew growing up. Yo, I got it good. I got a 64. I got a PlayStation. My cousins come over. We all hang out. I have clean air, clean water. I'm good. Like, and my parents would kind of tell me what life was like for them growing up. So I was saying to myself, yo, we got it good. I would tell my sister, we got it good. You know,
Yeah.
we not, yeah, some days we're broke, maybe, but we got legal cable. We got HBO and that. Like, I'm watching The Sopranos. I'm straight. I don't need much. I get it. But nowadays, man, that entitlement thing is just, they
Like,
think some of them,
what?
some of these kids be feeling like they deserve to, like, us bow down when they walk in the house and give them a crown when they walk in. And you can't tell me that. This is my room. And like, you don't pay rent.
Or mortgage or taxes,
Yeah,
right?
or like,
Stop.
they have. This is the most I've seen of young adults or young people, including my 8-year-old, feeling like they deserve certain things just because they were born. You know, they deserve certain things. Listen,
Yes.
my parents to this day, they maybe lately in the last 5 years, my mom probably told me she loved me. You know what
Oh,
I mean?
that's listen, that is a whole different segment because listen, I don't know if it's a black parent thing or Caribbean parent thing, but I ain't get that I love you until I'm with you like a couple years ago, right?
Recently.
But they did the best how they knew how to show love and just not verbalizing it wasn't a thing. That's not how they grew up. So they didn't give that to us. But anyway, that's a whole different, that's a
No.
whole
And
different.
I learned love through action growing up because I have a group of cousins. They're 8 siblings. When they left Brooklyn, in the 90s, moved to a nice home in Jersey. So once they moved to Jersey, they were the first black family in that town. Being in that town, which was crazy. Like growing up, I would go to their house and they go to school on Dr. King Day. I'm like, what do you mean? I'm like, why are you guys in school? Oh, they don't honor in here yet. I'm like, what? They don't honor Dr. King? Yeah, there was that. Yeah, Verona, New Jersey, Essex County, I think.
Say less.
Just straight, white bread. And they were the first black family. So going there, my aunt, not to put her business out there too much, but she was heartbroken. She went through trials and tribulations with failed love, failed marriages. It was crazy. A lot that happened. So she was the single mother with 8 kids. And my great aunt was there also to help out her mother. With that being said, there was like a free range in that house because it was like my mom, it was my aunt and my great aunt there watching the kids. So when you went over there, it was the party house because my aunt Danielle's working night hours as a nurse. She's not home at night. My great aunt, she's tired, so she's sleeping at nighttime. So we as kids, maybe like let's say there's 8 kids in that
Free for
household,
all.
8 kids in that household, plus you have my godbrother, me, my sister, and all the whole and like 10 of us outside the household, Queens, Far Rockaway, Spring Valley, whatever. We'd all go over there to hang out too for the summers. You got easily at any moment, you got like 18 kids running around the house.
My gosh.
But it allowed us to like stay out all night, go to parties at 12 years old, 13 years old, house parties, liquor involved, everything. But I knew when I'd be out there, I knew this is Disneyland. This is not real. Because on the flip side, my mother was very strict on top of me. To the point where my cousins from over there in Jersey, when they come to my house, when they come to New York, they will complain. Be like, yo, man, your mother be on, your mom be on top of things. Auntie Evers is on top of things. Oh my God, we can't do this, we can't do that. We gotta check in, whatever, whatever. And I knew back then, I was like, yeah, it sucks. Well, the way I live is straight Babylon. So it's like you need structure, you need order. And lo and behold, when my mother had a brain tumor in like 2010, she's okay now. They took it out. But when she had a brain tumor in 2010 and things looked grim, I remember two of my cousins from over there from Jersey, they came to visit her. And now we're all adults. So now as adults, we're all seeing how we grew up affected us. And for them, it was topsy-turvy what happened to them, up and down. So when they came over to see my mom, the first thing they told my mom was, I see why you raised so-and-so like that. You know, me and my sister. I see why you're like that. And I see how they turned out. I see the structure. You know what I'm saying? As
Structure is
opposed
important.
to, very important. Order is very important. And I learned that back then.
Yeah, you might not appreciate it then, but honestly, honestly, like the best thing because it helps you to build that foundation. You know what I mean? Like it teaches you values. It teaches well, first of all, it shields you and it also provides something for you to work towards. Okay, I want a little bit of freedom. I want to do this, but I know I need to work towards it. I need to, you know, because that's how my mom was. She's like, well, you got to earn it. You're not just going to go out to the movies with your friends. Like, you got to be on top of things. Your grades have to be good. I got to be able to trust you. My mom, listen, I remember one time I was on lock for like 6 months. Stayed on lock because my mom will always catch me out there. And so she's like, you're not learning a lesson yet. You're not learning a lesson yet. Right, because I wanted to go do shit, and she's like, "You're coming to ask me to go where? Where y'all go? You don't learn your lesson yet." And she always emphasized to me that how the things that I was able to participate in and have given to me all depended on me. Like you're in control of that. Like you know what I'm saying? Like I'm not just gonna give you these things. You have to work towards it. You have to prove yourself. Even to the point, my first car, like. My mom, just because she wanted to be difficult, bought me a stick shift, right?
Boy.
Well, actually, she bought a stick shift because I was bitching and complaining. I want to drive. How to take, first of all, she had me taking a bus from Chestnut Ridge to the damn Palisades Mall. She would not drop me off. And either I had to take a taxi, which would be like $20
Course.
from Chestnut Ridge all the way to Palisades if I wanted to go to the mall. Or I would have to walk from where my house was all the way out to was that
45,
Route 45?
45.
Yes, right at Red Schoolhouse Road to
Rest.
catch the bus that went all the way through Pearl River, Orangeburg, and eventually West Nyack.
My God. How
So
about
I
you?
like people were like, "Oh, you grew up good in Chestnut." Yeah, that may be true. Nice roof over my head, but my mom didn't let me forget that. Listen,
Humility.
you're not like these. Like you're not American. Like you're not one of these American kids that's just gonna get, you know, stuff and all that. You gotta work for it. So she did a really good job of trying to keep the same value system that we had back home here, and I appreciate that because. It really played, all of it's played a role in how I am now as a person, as a mom, as an individual, you know, outside of being a mom. I wouldn't trade that for the world, not
Me
one
neither.
bit. Yeah.
Me neither. I definitely value what my mother and father instilled in me as far as values and what to appreciate. You know, it's funny. That bus route from you going from Schoolhouse Road to through Pearl River, Orangeburg, et cetera. I bet you have cousins back home in Jamaica on the countryside who wish they had a bus route like that, you know, and the means. So life is also about perspective, you know, where you come from.
Listen, you don't want that story because we used to walk like 2.5 miles to school. You got to get up. First of all, we had to get up like the crack of dawn to bathe, right? And at the time, there was no water in the house. Our outside, we had to shower either, well, this was before they put the outside shower, But we had to go down to the river before, like, as the sun was rising. You know how cold river water is to bathe
Can
in at that
imagine.
time?
I can
As a
imagine.
kid, man, and then you have to haul all your shit, your rag, your towel, the soap.
My God, I can imagine.
And then, right, and then walk all these miles to school because it was nine of us in the house.
My
So my
God.
grandmother actually took all her grandkids at one time so that our parents could further their careers. So, like, you know, whether that's graduate school or build a business or migrate, she took us and we grew up like siblings.
Sure.
So me and my cousins are actually very close. But that was early life. And my mom never let me forget that. Like, just because you're here in America, I'm not going to raise you in this culture, you know, without paying homage to where we're coming from. So everything I've ever had or had to achieve, I had to work for it. It was never just given to me.
I can appreciate that. And I could visualize that walk, the 2 mile walk, and those humble beginnings. I can see how that shaped you. A real quick question about Jamaica, growing up in Jamaica. Is it true that country music was a big thing in Jamaica growing up?
Country music.
People always say
The
country.
Jamaican version of it,
Yeah,
because you know
Jamaican
we
version.
do all these cover versions.
Right. Jamaican version.
But that was everything though. They did a lot of cover music on R&B, rock song. That's how I learned a lot of rock, like a lot of songs here, because we heard the Jamaican version, and then finally you heard the original. He's like, oh, so that's where they get the song from. So
Yep,
yeah.
that yeah cover. I know cover is big down there, but I would hear from old heads from Jamaica. They'd be like, "Yeah, growing up, country music was a thing for them." But maybe it's a generational thing too.
Well, I would say reggae, actually, early influence of reggae came from like R&B influences. So reggae before ska, like ska was like, there was a, oh my God, why the name escapes me. Can't remember what they called it before it was ska, but ska was like the second form of
Toasting, maybe
early
toast,
reggae.
not
Huh?
toasting, not toasting.
No, it's a different name. I can't, like, I know this, but I don't know why it's not coming to me. And then from ska, then it started shifting to like the roots and culture reggae. It went to rock steady type of reggae first. Then it morphed into roots and culture in the 70s. But a lot of the early music influences came from like R&B, jazz from like New Orleans. And blues and country. So a lot
Right.
of that mixed with the traditional, you know, sounds and influences on the island. Yeah.
I remember my second or third time going to Haiti in the 90s. In the 90s, I had to go for my grandmother's funeral. She passed away of AIDS in like 96. Blood transfusion gone wrong.
Transfusion. Yeah.
And mind you, up here in New York, at Good Sam, it happened.
Are you serious?
Yeah, and I wish my parents had the wherewithal and the
To sue
legal,
their
but
butts
just yeah,
for.
because that would have, immigrants are immigrants, and sometimes we don't have the wherewithal to go to fight for our rights. But that being said, it was like my second or third time being down there. Regardless, I remember going down to Haiti. I'm like 11-ish, 11 years old. First of all, it was like June. It was June, so it was hot as hell. It was got the plane, that heat just hit you. I remember going to her house, and I went to her house. And I was like, "I gotta use the bathroom." "Okay, come here." And they brought me outside to the outhouse. Like, go ahead. I'm like, no, I gotta use the bathroom. My privileged mind needs toilets. It needs flushing. It needs a."
Yeah, right.
They're like, no, use that for now." I'm like, "Okay." And later on, it's like, "We're hungry." And I said, like, "All right, give me that goat over there. Give me that goat over there. Bring it over. Why? Just bring it over. We doing that machete. Just 1 second." It's just like,
The trauma,
that's just a,
the
that's our dinner,
trauma.
okay? I have to learn quickly that what you know and what you're used to is a little bitty box, perfect for you. But throw it out the window because you're in a new land, adjust quickly, and when in Rome, be a Roman, you know? So I had to learn that, perspective is key. And to appreciate what you have here, because what we have here is a gold mine. Now, it's a gold mine being corrupted right now as we speak, but it's still nevertheless a gold mine. So I definitely take that with me, those lessons growing up and even now going back down there. But yeah, I could sympathize and empathize with you on that.
Yeah.
I want to talk to you. We said no politics.
Oh.
And I'm gonna keep it no
Am I gonna have to
politics.
call my therapist after this, Mike? Because I don't
I'm
want
gonna
to. Let's see where we go with this one.
yes, on the micro level, no politics. On the micro, but on the macro level, I think it's important for us to acknowledge that unfortunately, a few months ago, it seems like the country took a worse turn as far as what they chose as a leader. And it
No,
seemed
they no. This cut. Listen, I'm gonna stop you right there. You remember when John F. Kennedy died, and Malcolm X gave that speech, "The
chickens
chickens coming
coming
home
home
to
to
roost,"
roost.
and people lost their mind.
Yes,
I
ma'am.
will say this is exactly what that is right now.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. As a matter of fact, I'm seeing actual people who were media personalities, like the gentleman from Barstool. I forgot his name. He's an arrogant guy. Jay Portnoy, the CEO. He's a very MAGA right wing Boston dude, and
Right.
I saw him on a live stream or a clip of him on a live stream earlier saying, I lost $20 million in my stock yesterday because of these tariffs. And I see this streamer, this young streamer, Adam Ross, some kid who had Trump on his live stream and interviewed him and was bigging him up and whatever. And he was saying, I lost 8 figures this week off the tariffs. So the tariffs. And then you have actual, dignitaries and politicians, who are, they have.
How those stock portfolios looking now?
There's that, and then you have people like Tulsi Gabbard, who was at Capitol Hill 2 weeks ago over the whole Signal drama, having to. Oh, I didn't know where I was or what country I was. I didn't know what group chat I was in, and I didn't know that we were telling a reporter that we were going to bomb Yemen. And it's just like, dude, you guys knew the lack of confidence that y'all were bringing on the table when you hired this guy. I mean, when you voted this man in or supported him. My thing is stand on your word. The chickens are coming home to roost, like you said, like stand on business. So
Yeah.
I think to your point, that's where we're at right now. I'm seeing actual peers. I don't know about you, Lisa. I'm seeing actual peers of ours, and they're like so defiant. This is culture right now, Lisa. Let me step back for a second. There's been a culture for a while now of people, even our people, some of us, who feel like we're renegades. We're gonna like vote against our better interests. We're gonna push for capitalism, no matter what, even if it hurts us in the short term or in the long term. And they want to be different. Some people voted for Trump to be different, to be a maverick, to feel like they are down when really they're voting against their better interests. That's just me rambling. And we said no politics, but surely on some level you've seen someone's behavior.
Okay, so let me give you context in terms of like what I actually do for a living, and kind of why it's hard for me because I'm in the trenches. My work is in public administration, specifically conflict management. The nature of so okay, there's two layers of what I do. A layer where I deal with all of it, regardless of what kind of conflict, kind of like a fixer, right? So people or organizations will call and say, okay, we have this issue happening and we need somebody to come in and help fix this because it's disrupting business or it's disrupting the school environment or whatever the case is. And sometimes it's just a matter of lack of communication skills. Excuse me. Sometimes it's a matter of lack of information. Sometimes it's just genuinely people having differences and you need to align those differences. And sometimes a lot of it's rooted in bigotry, racism, and all kinds of things. So the nature of my work takes me from very small things to very complex issues. I deal a lot with like employment issues, workplace issues, whether it's government or what do you call it? Private sector, where there's issues of workplace discrimination, workplace employ harassment, bullying, and all that other stuff, right?
Right. I think you're muted. I think you're muted. Hold on. I think you're muted. I can't hear you. No. Yeah. Not try now. It says Lisa's recording. We're starting a new track. Try now.
Can you hear me?
Now I got you.
I can.
There you go. You go. You good. You good. Yeah, I'm changing your device, but it's okay. Maybe your battery or maybe you got unplugged. It's all right. You're good. You're good now. Okay. No, you were doing well. Continue. You're doing good. Oh, now you can't hear. I can hear you for a second. How about now? Say something. No, I can't.
Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah.
No?
Yes. You're good now. You're good now. You're good.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
I can't hear you.
You can't hear me? I wonder why you can't
Can
hear
you
me.
hear me?
Absolutely, yes. Absolutely, yes. And you can't hear me? You can't hear me?
But I can't hear you.
Interesting. Let me see. Maybe it's your device. Maybe it's your device. Maybe take it out, rip it out. How about now? Okay, let me see. Now I can hear you. Absolutely. There you go. No, you're good. I can clean it up. Don't worry. No, keep going, because I can edit it. Don't worry. You're good. But you tell me about your professional situation now. Let me see. For me, it says I'm recording, but for you, it's saying upload complete. Let me see. I think. Oh, you know what? For some reason, you're not recording. All right, come back. Hold on. Now you're back.
Okay.
Okay. Now you're recording. Now it says you're recording. Go ahead. We're back. Now you're good.
I was just saying that for me, see it all. I see how the bigger issue, how the bigger macro policies are trickling down into like everyday life for people, and how people are either being impacted by it or how they're being radicalized by it, right? I mean, either way, they're impacted in some capacity. So that's a lot of my work days. And it's heavy work because you literally see people, like mental health declining. Workplaces are not safe for people anymore. There's a lot of, and here's the thing too, like the costs are very real. Like we have people at record numbers calling out sick, right? Developing health issues that are costing companies way more money than, because now they have to pay for these benefits. Like these, you know what I'm saying? Like that's an employer cost. Not to mention like people that are out on medical family, not family medical leave, on medical leave. Now you have to bring someone in to do that work. So it's like the trickle effect is real. But it sucks. Every day it just feels like we're in the matrix. I'm not gonna lie to you. Like the day after the election, I had to teach an anger management class, and it was, oh my, I don't know how I got through that class because first of all, I didn't want to leave my house. Second of all, the folks that were in the class, they're court ordered. So like I had to teach. I couldn't just cancel because they need it for their pretrial hearings and stuff. But I was like, damn, how do I go into this class and face the class? I don't even know what dynamics I'm getting. Like, are there Trump
Right.
supporters coming through? Like, there was just like
Oh
so
my
many
God.
things rolling through my mind, but survived it. But it's definitely been a rough couple of
Few
months.
months. Yeah, it
Yeah,
has.
yeah. But I would say, like, for folks that like, it's a wake up call in terms of change because I think we've become really comfortable with like
Oh, yes.
how things have been like since the civil rights movement.
Comfortable.
And I'm not just talking about Black people. I'm talking about all the groups that have benefited from civil rights because of Black people.
Absolutely.
I'm talking about women. I'm talking about other folks who we've just become comfortable because there's been this illusion that, now that we have seats at the table, that there's no need to continue to like there's no continuous fight, but this is a
Yeah.
wake-up call for us.
You
So.
know, growing up as a privileged American, in the 90s, it was normal for me to hear that abortion is legal, that Roe versus Wade was passed in the 1970s. And even if you personally don't believe in abortion, just the idea that it was law of the land, it was a privilege to me to know that, It was almost like a right.
Yeah.
A woman's choice. So, when that got overturned a few years ago, I was like, wow, we're going to the Stone Age. I felt like, wow, okay, that was a privilege. A woman's choice was a privilege that we're now being told, no, we're
Yeah.
reversing that. Just to see how the Supreme Court has been weaponized over the last few years, voting in general and gerrymandering has been an all-time high. Just how our political system has been bastardized and made a mockery of. It's made me realize I've been not me personally, been asleep at the wheel as a citizen, but just my generation has really been more about the look versus the substance about their work in this country. We have been hanging out for far too long. I love when Kendrick Lamar last summer, he had a song he released on Instagram called Watch the Party Die, because I feel like it's time to watch this party die. We've been partying for way too long. You know what I mean? I think the theme of tonight of our conversation has been we've been way more Vybz Kartel than we have been Peter Tosh. We have been way more escapism than realism. And it's now coming home. Like you said, the chickens are coming home to roost. And it's sad because you're a parent, I'm a parent, and our kids are gonna feel it. And social mobility and school, the DOE got dismantled. You know, just in various ways, our children are gonna have to work 10 times as harder to get the quote unquote progress that we were trying to achieve in our adolescence. I fear for them. But, and I'll say this, I'm seeing now the spark of potentially maybe a blue wave in 2 years in midterms, or maybe a pendulum swing in 4 years.
I'm
But
not home.
one, I'm not holding my breath for that. And two, it can't just be this every 4 year pendulum swing. That don't solve anything. We have to really, as a culture, as a community, as North Americans, we have to identify for ourselves to ourselves once and for all, what do we want to be as a nation? What are our values? You know, what do we believe in? Do we believe in universal health care? Do we believe in free education? Do we believe in, you know, proper food and agriculture and investing and clean air, clean environmental air and food? Or do we believe in just commerce, commerce, commerce? And until we can come together as a country and make those tough decisions, we're going to always have this little pendulum swing. 4 years were this way, 4 years were that way. 4 years
I think
were
we'll
red.
ever come together as a country
Yeah.
as long as those isms exist, because talking about universal health care would mean that, oh, we're gonna give people that we want to keep marginalized, we want to keep them unhealthy, we want to keep them beneath us, that would, like, their health would
Power
improve,
them.
right? Empower them. That would mean, well, do I really want to say what I was said by the education system? Not just terrible, right? But, like, definitely needs some work. But also, as we know, this education system is it's I don't even want to say broken, but it wasn't honest. It wasn't only from one perspective. We live in a country that is multi-layered, whether people want to admit it or not. This country is built on diversity, whether people migrated here by force or whether, they came here by choice. So, this is where we are. You can't erase that. You walk, depend, I guess, in some people live in bubbles. They can go days without seeing another person that looks, people that look different than them on either side, right? Like, because there's some Black people who've never really been around white people. They don't know, you know what I mean? And vice versa. And not to discount, like, the other groups, right? Talking about, we would have to see people for people, right? And I'm just not sure that this country's ready to do that. Just the humanity of it all. This is not socialism. This is not communism, because they'll be quick to tell you that because you stand for these things that, oh, you're a communist. Half these people don't even know what communism means. It's just rhetoric, right? Like, stuff the prop like that they use as propaganda to scare, oh, this person communist because they believe in this. No,
I know. I'm with you. I'm with you. I'm with you. You know, that propaganda gets used to smear actual progressive ideas. I'm with you on that. I want to ask you.
That's what they said about every when people were protesting Vietnam. Oh my gosh, they were communists, right? Like,
Yeah, these hippie communists, and it's always a way to keep the train going, the colonial train going. I want to ask you, we're gonna wrap up soon, but I want to ask you a question. Because you used the word bubble earlier. When the election happened this past November and he was elected again, there was this rhetoric going around that, well, you know, guys, some of you on the left or liberal leaning or progressive leaning, however you define yourself, some of y'all were living in your own bubble. You know, some of y'all didn't recognize what other people wanted, what they were looking for. as far as leadership, as far as yearns and concerns, etc. I say that to say this. Do you feel like we or you were in a bubble as far as voter turnout and voter enthusiasm? Or do you feel like I do, that some of this was just plain old sexism or a mixed bag? Or what do you think?
A mixed bag, for sure. I think definitely bubbles on either side, right? And again, going back to being comfortable, right? Oh, we're way too progressive. You know, we've made so much progress. There's no way people would, you know, vote this way. There are legitimately people who weren't ready for a woman to take the highest office in this country. As you can see, Donald Trump lost against two women, right? So that tells me, for me, right,
he beat two women, you mean?
Right, yes. That's what I meant to say. My bad. Yes, right? So it's like every time he faces, you know, they weren't ready for Hillary for whatever reason. They weren't ready for Kamala, both of whom, despite how you might feel about them, if we were going to elect the president of the United States based on merit, as these folks, including the president,
meritocracy,
right? Bashfully stated out there that merit, let's go back to merit-based hiring. Well, if we were to do that based on merit, then sir, you wouldn't have a job right now. Because both of these women, regardless if you agree with their politics or not, by definition, by resume, were more than qualified for the job.
Absolutely. Yeah. Listen, it got dark when it, like, summer months into the fall with some of my guy peers, because you would hear rhetoric like, and they know who they are when I say this. They would say things like about Kamala. They would say things like, well, dude, bro, what if a world leader in Russia or in Arabic states or whatever, what if they want to fuck her? Pardon my French. What if they want to have sex with her? How will she react to that? Will she have the strength to combat that? You can't have, I'm saying, they would say this. These are grown men. Would say things like that, like what if they want to mess with her, or they want to get with her, or
and what? You entertained that conversation from grown men.
My jaw would be dropped to the floor. Like, are you really a caveman right now? You know what I'm saying? Because remember, hear me out. A lot of guys, they don't talk to each other in general about in depth things. So this is the first, you know, this election was the first time where a lot of men were sharing.
It sounded like a middle school conversation.
That's
something I can hear at the cafeteria table with,
you would think, a 13-year-old, yes,
boys, right? Like that's what I'm hearing.
It was nothing about policy, nothing about concerns about her record in California, good, bad, or ugly. Nothing of note, nothing of substance. It was like pubescent small things where it's like, you're voting with your organ, not with your brain. You're voting with a lot of guys, unfortunately, a lot of men, they still think we're brawn. They don't think we're brains. You know, they think like, well, alpha. You know,
I was very shocked, I will say, that I saw a lot of Caribbean men, especially Haitian men, because I definitely took some folks on Facebook.
Oh, yeah.
Because I was ready for all the smoke on Facebook, right? Like,
oh, yeah.
It was very, my toxic trait at the time is very, like, engaging with folks just because I'm like, all right, I got all the facts and I'm about to hit you with them right now.
Right.
So I was very shocked to see that, right? And
right.
I was like, you know, your boy got a whole plan to, you know, deport people, right? And not only just deport people, but how he's reference people from the Caribbean. Let's not forget the whole shithole country debacle in his first term, right? And a number of things. So I just couldn't understand how anyone can get behind that to justify, to say, that's my guy. You know what I mean? Like, I can get behind this politics. Also, the other thing that I saw, and I'm going to be very real and call this out. A lot of people went in that direction because they were homophobic. A lot of people don't like the whole, they believe, let's have this taboo conversation. A lot of folks felt like Democrats were pushing this agenda of the LGBTQ plus community And that's where the buck stopped for them. There was no, all right, is this an agenda or this is just making sure, this is ensuring access and rights. You might not agree with people's lifestyle and what they do or how they identify, but that's not your business. Like that's, especially if you're Christian, that's not your fight to fight.
I agree.
We don't make those calls. So beyond that, like as a society, laws are made to protect everyone in the society, not just protect everyone in society, but draw some social norms. And so people would rather vote against their interests because they didn't like a certain group of people being able to have protection under the law. Let's be real.
Absolutely. Homophobia and the culture wars came out during this election cycle. The irony is, 20 years ago with John Kerry, it came out with gay marriage. That was a big thing as well. And so that same card was used again, just in a different lens, where 20 years ago, the whole gay marriage thing was a big issue. And then now this year, it was trans issues. It was what bathroom are they using? You know, or we have a trans swimmer. She's swimming with girls, and she's a man. It's like so many different things were extrapolated and just like used to stroke up fear in voting. And I felt bad because a lot of people, especially our people, they fell for it. And it's like, dude, you'd rather vote against your better interest because of the culture wars. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's like now your stock portfolio is going to take a hit because you can't sit and have a bathroom next to so and so. So it's like,
Listen.
it's just, and by the way, let me play devil's advocate when I say this. I'm not saying you don't have the right to be perplexed or confused about whatever you knew growing up as to be quote unquote normal, be transformed or enlightened to new styles, or sometimes not even just new styles, but there's different ways of living or what's natural to other people. I understand you having a hard time adjusting, but for your own self-interest, it shouldn't outweigh your own social mobility, your own progressive mobility, your own financial status. Your 401k is taking a dip last week because you can't recognize that a dude just happens to be gay and wants to be at the same bar as you or the same spot as you, or wants to be married next to you, or a woman wants to have an abortion that she wants a free choice. It's like
I agree.
the culture
And let's not
wars.
forget, once upon a time, that was us. That was Black folks.
Absolutely.
That was integration.
Absolutely.
Was us. So you have to think about these things. Like you can't like get your rights afforded to you, whatever rights we do have, and then look around others within your society and say, "Oh no!" Like especially, I'm gonna call out Christians right now. I really am.
Go for
I really am. Because if you're a true Christian
Love thy
and
neighbor.
you're living according to the word, we know what the word says, yes, about certain things, and that's absolutely true, right? Like we've been tasked with that. But on the other side of that, what God calls us to do, right, is to take care of each other, to show love
Absolutely.
to one another.
Absolutely.
Uplift the poor and the downtrodden. Like that's literally what Jesus's life was all about. He wasn't chilling with the richest people and all of the well-to-dos in society. He literally went to the outcast. That's where he went. That's where he was in the communities. So for us to call ourselves Christian and we're abandoning the fundamental principle of what it means to live according to Jesus's teachings, like I
Percent.
can't get with that.
It's straight hypocrisy.
Yeah.
It's straight hypocrisy, and it shows you're not Christ-like. You're hate-like.
Right. We're not the ones who are judging people at the end of the day, right? What is it? Who he without sin cast the first stone? Your sin may not be homosexuality. Your sin might be adultery. Your sin might be theft. Your sin might be. But listen, at the end of the day, God's not looking at all the sins and be like, well, this was more sinful than yours. You know what I'm saying? Like it weighs equally for everybody. So it's not our job to persecute people, right? You
I agree.
can love the sinner, right? Hate the sin, right? But that doesn't mean that in doing that, We're going to persecute and actively work against people being marginalized and put into, you know what I mean, on healthy spaces. But also on the other side of that, we all have our own responsibility of how we can live, right? And the values that we want to instill in our communities and our families. I just think that we've become so tribish.
I was gonna say tribal.
Tribal. Yeah. It's like, oh, this, you know, 10 toes down on this and everything else.
And I'll cut my nose and spite my face in the midst of standing on that principle.
Yeah. I just think that marginalized people of color can't afford not to be unified. We don't get that privilege. We don't even get that right to be divided, because right. It's very simple. Divided we fall. And if we don't get that by now, then I don't know when we'll ever get it.
I agree. It's very hypocritical for marginalized people to thumb their nose at others who are also fighting for rights. I don't get it. I don't understand it. Again, I'm not saying we can't have internal discussions about where we disagree on certain things. We can have that discussion. Fine. But not at the expense of our mobility. No. So yeah, I love that you brought that up. I love that because I've been preaching that too for a long time. And I'm very disappointed in us as a people. To your point, yes, I saw with Haitians. I saw with a lot of West Indians. I saw a lot of church folk just thumbing their nose and wagging their finger. And then now we're paying the price for it. Before we leave, one last question. Earlier off mic, I had referenced a conversation I had with my dad because he retired recently, like a few years ago. And he wants to go back to Haiti and live the rest of his years with my mom. But there's instability in the nation with drama that's American influenced. And there's also just like, he has a lot of ties to New York. So it's hard for him to leave, but he wants to leave. Now, we were talking about going back home, and if going back home is financially or just lifestyle-wise feasible, you as a born Jamaican, a proud Jamaican woman, do you feel like going back home right now would be feasible for you, or it would be too much?
And I would be. Because Jamaica is not the Jamaica that I left, right? Shoot, it's not even the same Jamaica 5 years ago. So much has changed. And I know some people may not agree because sometimes, again, people live in their bubbles and they don't really see beyond their immediate circumstances. But I go to Jamaica often enough and I'm in tune with what's happening politically and economically. So I'm aware of like the temperature there. I've always said this. If I had the option to educate my kids there, I would. I would. In fact, that is absolutely something that I am still considering to do because they're at the pivotal point where it's still possible. I know I can live comfortably. I mean, it's not like I didn't live there before, so I wouldn't be going back with an American mindset because you can't migrate to a country, whether you're from there or you're just going back as an expat, with an American mindset or a mindset from the country that you're coming from, because life there is going to be different. So you do have to adjust your expectations and you have to adjust your lifestyle to live there. If not, you're going to go back and you're going to be miserable because you're trying to hold it to the same standard.
Right.
So that's my first advice. Like the mindset has to go out the window. Right. But it's absolutely something that I am considering as a reset year for myself, for my family. I was actually, I'm in like the doctorate phase of my life.
And I know you are.
I'm actually thinking about finishing it at the University of the West Indies just to have that time there and expose my kids to their culture, their heritage. Get a little reset for myself mentally, emotionally, and back, like connected to the land. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I would do that. Now I understand like the challenges that your dad might be facing with Haiti. And I guess my advice is, well, you know, what's the closest thing that, you know, you can indulge in that will still give you that connectedness to the familiarity of your Caribbean culture? Maybe it's not Haiti. Maybe it's
Martinique, Guadeloupe.
Yeah. So
shout out to my boy, Javion. I remember when March 2020 hit and the pandemic hit, he happened to be in Jamaica already. for some business, and he had his laptop there. So he didn't come back till like, I want to say January 2021, or no, maybe it was like spring 2021. So he spent the whole year, some change in Jamaica, just chilling at his grandma's house, working there. And I was like, you lucky bastard.
Listen, it's not off the table for me, not at all. I think it's a richer life, even with Jamaica's challenges. I'm not saying it's a perfect utopia, but for one, I will be home where I'm not a black woman. I'm just a woman who happens to be black, right? Who happens to have that African descent. I get to live, breathe, and eat my culture, right? That's important to me. I think the anxiety and fear some would go away because you don't have to have these conversations. Like my kids ask me, why do white people hate us so much? And it's like they're getting these like extremes, you know, because my kids are old enough now where they're like they dig for their own news. Of course, I have to be like, not all news is good news, and where are you getting your news from? But they're those kind of kids, they're curious. But I would encourage people who have a connection or want a connection outside of here to look for it. It doesn't have to be back in Africa. It could be in the Caribbean, right? We're all one people. Like if you really look at the culture, the food, it's just called
Absolutely.
something different. Assess the situation. I think there's so much misinformation. Do your research, you know, look into, talk to people who've done it. There's a lot of people who are now doing that. They're back and forth, or they've gone, they've set up and they have a life and it's working for them. Do your research. What are your options? What sacrifices can I make or I'm willing to make? You know what I'm saying? And what kind of life do I want for myself and for my family? And then make your decision. We don't have to be prisoners to a thing anymore. Like that's not the world we live in anymore, right? We have so many tools at our disposal that we can literally make these shifts. And we gotta throw fear out the window.
I
You
agree.
know? Yeah.
I agree. It's funny you mentioned your daughter and what she asked you. It reminds me of my daughter a few months ago. No, last year, last February. I guess they were learning about segregation, and she asked me, she's like, "Daddy, what was segregation like for you?" I said, "Hold on, I'm not that old. Like, hold on. What was
Yeah,
civil
but
rights era?" I'm like, "Oh, no, I'm not that old now. Relax." So, but you know, our kids are curious. Our kids are curious, and then our kids day to day are dealing with identity issues, plus sometimes bigotry, depending on who they're talking to. You know, whether it's online gaming, talking to crazy kids from the Midwest or elsewhere, or saying foul language to them, or kids in their classrooms who are
that's happened
saying
to my
words.
son too. He was on a video game and called the N-word a few times.
Yeah, there's that. There's that. Just very. Just you know, my daughter. Last thing I'll say, but my daughter, my middle daughter. You know, I've kind of failed when it comes to her health care. What I mean by that is she's a little insecure about her hair right now and her hair growth. Partially because she sees people who have long hair, who have long either natural long flowing hair, or they are blow drying their hair or getting a lot of braids. So for the last year or two, she's been big on braids. She wants braids. She wants extensions with the braids. And on some days, like picture day, she wants to have her hair blow dried. My older sister, she had to give me a thrashing that day, a verbal thrashing, because I sent my daughter to spend the weekend over there with my cousin, with her cousin, my nephew, over there. And I told my sister, "Yo, look over Lauren's hair and let me know what products she needs and what oil she needs and whatnot, because we're trying to stimulate growth. And for a while, it's been shrinkage and not no growth." So when she came back the end of the weekend, she was like, "Look, come here." And she gave me a whooping pretty much. And she was showing me how, like, I guess I wasn't protecting her hair enough with the heat protectors when it came to blow drying. Mind you, she only blow dried her hair like twice, maybe three times.
That's enough to do that. You see my bangs? Every time so my bangs don't curl back like the rest of my hair do because of heat damage.
Right.
So
And
All it takes is once or twice a year, and you're like, dang, I gotta start all over with my curl pattern.
that's what, and is that just what you showed? That's what my sister has shown me. She's like, come here, let me show you. And she showed me the same thing that he damaged. And she was like, her hair grows curls up to a certain extent. At the end, it's like you should show, like, there's damage. And she was like, don't blow dry hair anytime soon. Use these products, use these oils, and start over again. And no braiding for a while now. My daughter is a summer baby in August. So she wants to have that those summer braids, you know? She's like, don't do that for a while. Let the follicles grow and resist, resist. And the reason why I'm saying I was failing her is because I would let her do her thing with her hair when she was showing me that she was having some insecurities about
About, right.
her hair. But
Yeah.
really, I should have been more on point. So I'm not saying I wasn't trying to tell her to love herself. I would say those things and I would tell her the importance of self-love, but I didn't go as strongly as I should have. And ultimately, I should have been like a little totalitarian. Like, no drying, no braids. I should have been more authoritative about it. So
Yeah.
I said to say, I see you with your hair and your beautiful curls and your beautiful hair. And I said to myself, I need to be on point as a father of a black woman, a young black girl, to be aware about how she perceives herself, how she thinks the world perceives her, and to nurture and take care of her in that respect. And
Yeah.
to shield her from self-harm and self-damage.
Yeah, that's really important. And I'll just say this to kind of close out what you were sharing just now. It is really important to kind of reinforce like the positive imagery. I take, well, y'all know I'm a book nerd, but I purposefully take my kids to either the library or a bookstore. We, you know, while I'm big on balancing the kind of books that we get, because I think reading diversity is important. I always, at least in one of the books that we're getting for the kids especially, it's something that has to do with celebrating blackness, whether it's hair, whether it's like fitting into, you know, a space where you're one of, whether it's books about culture, your culture specifically. Like you constantly have to reinforce just like dope blackness, you know what I mean? And
Normalize
whatever
it.
that looks like, not, you know, we have the luxury with being black of, you know, we could do so much, and our hair
Right,
doesn't
right.
have to be long. Like there's so many things that we could do creatively with our hairs that others aspire to. But reinforcing that to the kids that that's okay, right? Like this is something to celebrate and not be
Demonize.
insecure about
Insecure
that.
about. I agree. Well, on that note, I want to thank you. I know I took a lot of your time. Thank you so much for coming on. Hopefully, we do it again soon.
Yep.
I appreciate you for so much. It was long overdue, like you said.
Right, that part.
I appreciate your time and your candor. Any last words you want to get out there, or you want to say, or promote, or anything, or not?
Yes, I do. I know we're living in some like uncertain times. You know, it could be scary and we just don't know what's going to happen. But I will say to folks that listen, change on any level has never been comfortable, right? Has never been comfortable. Like change is automatic. It's going to happen whether you're on board with it or not, right? But how do you navigate that? How you progress through it? It really is up to you. It really is about mindset. You have to shift your mindset, your attitude towards change. Once you change your attitude towards change, you can start to progress. You have to be flexible. And while we're not living in business as usual, it is business as usual because life is lifing, right? And we still
It
have
is
to
life.
do the everyday things. So I encourage people to embrace the change, you know, turn it into an opportunity for something else, something different. Maybe change is upon us to kind of like pull the rug out from under us so that we can, you know, we can see what else is possible. And, you know, we can either make sacrifices or excuses. Which one is it going to be?
Sacrifices or excuses. I like that. Well, on that note, thank you so much. I appreciate you coming on. It meant a lot to me. It was, like I said, a long
Awesome.
time. Long time. All right.
Long
Overdue.
overdue.
Long
Yes, I
overdue.
agree.
I'm sure we'll catch up soon and do some else down the road. I want to encourage you to record again, whether it's with me or elsewhere, because I feel like you have a lot to offer. I feel like you have a lot to get off your chest. You have a lot on your mind.
Listen, I am working on two books currently, but that's a different conversation.
Okay, hopefully when we come back, you can give me a little more insight into what you want to write about.
Yeah.
I like the fact that you're a thinker, that you are an intellectual, that you are someone who pushes yourself. In fact, next time we talk, I want to have a conversation with you about management, because I remember a few months ago you told me how you had to like do a whole upheaval in your professional world and how and what it meant for you. I've seen your face now, so keep that in mind, because listen, I'm a teacher that works with, teaching assistants, paraprofessionals. So it's hard to manage other people around you and
Agree.
to get them on one accord.
Yes.
So in a future conversation, we're gonna have that convo, because I want to get some insight into what you've been through. But that's till next time. So
Next time.
till next time, my sister, we'll do
Pleasure,
this.
pleasure. Thank you, Mike.
All I ask is keep your laptop and their website on so the audio can upload. Other than
I
that,
got you.
thank you, my love. Be
All right.
safe.
Take care. Be
Take
safe.
care.
Bye
Take care.
bye.